Station WJBK, AM and FM, Detroit, Michigan. Time is 1 o'clock.
This is Bob King, with Barney Morris standing by, reporting on the Radio 15 news line. The citizens of Michigan, in the cities and the hamlets, and from Governor Romney to the man in the street, today shares the grief of the nation in mourning the death of President Kennedy. Not since the death of President Roosevelt in 1945 has there been such an outpouring of public grief. Some wept unashamedly yesterday as the news spread of the death of the chief executive. As a matter of fact, we might mention at this point, and here in the WJBK radio newsroom, we've had several phone calls, even in the past hour, women and men making suggestions, telling us about cancellations of different programs and events that were scheduled for today and were scheduled for tomorrow, too. And it's a strange thing that the mere talking about this tragedy brought them to tears before the end of the conversation. In a couple of cases, especially with some women that phoned, they broke into tears before the end of the conversation and couldn't carry on. But that's the way most people feel, not only in Detroit and Michigan, but throughout the nation. Scores of Michigan public events have been canceled, as we mentioned, or postponed. And, of course, flags across the state fly at half-staff on the order of Secretary of State James M. Hare. People of all faiths prayed yesterday for the president, who suffered such an untimely death, and more religious services are scheduled today. The reaction was the same from Detroit to Copper Harbor. Stunned disbelief, and then grief, when the realization hit that it was really true. Governor Romney, who was in Omaha, Nebraska yesterday, attending a governor's conference when he heard the news, called the assassination, and we quote him, a horrible, immeasurable shock and a national tragedy. The same sentiments were expressed, but perhaps not so eloquently, by a hotel doorman, who shook his head and said simply, it's a cruel, cruel thing. Detroit Mayor Jerome Kavanaugh, who knew the president personally, said, and this is the way the mayor put it, I am just shocked beyond words. This is a terrible, dastardly thing. He was truly one of the great presidents of our history. There are many noticeable signs in Michigan that the president, who opened his 1960 campaign with a Labor Day speech in Cadillac Square in Detroit, was dead. At the Argonaut Building in Detroit, a passerby somehow worked his way up to the roof and personally lowered the flag to half-staff. Throughout the state, just hours ago, thoughts of Thanksgiving and Christmas shopping were dominating everyone's minds. But now, in many cities, the lights on the Christmas decorations already strung in the downtown areas were extinguished. The crush of phone calls from people wanting to confirm the terrible news, but hoping it wasn't true, jammed the facilities. Of course, the calls still come in, not as heavily as they did yesterday, but nevertheless, the phone continues to ring. And as we mentioned earlier, an unaccountable number of public events, from Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater's scheduled talk in Grand Rapids, which was for yesterday, to the Ice Follies, a Detroit Pistons game, a jazz concert at Mercy College, movies and plays were all postponed or canceled. Many supper clubs are also closed, along with theaters, especially in the Detroit area. Today, Governor George Romney issued a proclamation calling for a one-month period of mourning in the state of Michigan for the death of President Kennedy. The governor also asked for a one-minute period of silence at noon on Monday, including cessation of all business and halting of all traffic. And he ordered all non-essential departments of the state government to be closed on Monday. The official period of mourning will be effective until sundown on Sunday, December 22, 1963, and during the entire period, the American flag and the state flag of Michigan will be flown at half-staff on all state buildings. Romney also ordered the Michigan National Guard to provide an honor guard at the Capitol in Lansing and to fire a 21-round salute at noon on Monday in honor of the late president, and a 50-round salute at sundown Monday for the 50 states of the Union. And here's late word, also from the Motor City. United Auto Workers President Walter Reuther today called on all automotive, aerospace, and agricultural implement firms to shut down their plants for 2 hours on Monday during President Kennedy's funeral. Reuther, whose union has 1 million members, says UAW headquarters has received requests from all over the country for help in finding a way for workers to leave their jobs during the services. Says Reuther, we are calling on managements of the auto, aerospace, and agricultural implement companies whose workers were representative to cooperate in making appropriate arrangements. You know, it's interesting to note that 1 year ago, President Kennedy was in Detroit, and 600 Detroit policemen guarded his every move. In addition, there was the usual number of Secret Service men who always guard him. Almost every step the president took had to be authorized. The visit, of course, went without a hitch. That's history. Kennedy was guarded from rooftops and windows, from streets and sidewalks. Officers kept in constant communication with pocket radio sets. On the president's route from Detroit Metropolitan Airport to downtown Detroit, police stood ready for any eventuality. All the overpasses through which the president's car traveled were blocked off temporarily, and a 35-man motorcycle escort led the motorcade. There was one brief crisis. A citizen watching from the roof of a downtown office building pulled a toy pistol from a paper bag to show a friend. He had bought the toy pistol for his small son. Nothing serious happened, but the man was suddenly surprised by a grim-faced officer confronting him. Security precautions even included a careful use of left-handed police officers to make sure none were placed where they would have their backs to a crowd of people. All officers wear their guns on their left hips, and for a left-handed officer, the butt of the gun has to face backwards to enable him to draw. The gun butt might be a temptation to someone behind. Said a police spokesman, "We always anticipate the unknown screwball because you never can tell." Well, let's turn to newsman Barney Morris now, and perhaps he has some late news from another part of the country, Texas, which is prominently in the news these days. Barney?
Well, Bob, the police chief in Dallas, Texas, Jesse Curry, came up with a couple of comments today that were new and kind of interesting. He told newsmen, for one thing, that the FBI interviewed accused assassin Leo Oswald a week or two ago. Asked if the FBI notified Dallas police of Oswald's presence, the chief replied, "No, sir, they did not." And he added, "Why they hadn't gotten around to informing us of this man, we don't know." He said the FBI told him the interview last night after Oswald was in custody. And Curry said the FBI agents didn't reveal what information they'd learned from their interview or if the interview indicated he was a person to watch. Curry said, "I think this actual target was the president. I say this because he hit the president twice from about a 75-yard distance on a slant, and apparently he was an expert marksman. You know, there were some comments earlier today that perhaps it was not the president at all that was the main target, but perhaps the governor, Connally, of Texas. The governor was formerly the chief of naval operations in Washington, and the assassin, or the accused assassin, had written a letter to Connally when he was in that Navy post, asking him to relieve him of a dishonorable discharge from the service. Connally didn't do it. Well, Curry said today that communist literature was found in Oswald's apartment. He said he believed the material was for Oswald's own reading purposes and not for distribution to others. The police chief Curry also said that he believes that Oswald carried the rifle used to shoot President Kennedy when he went to work yesterday morning. Oswald rode to work with another man, and the man said Oswald had a package wrapped in heavy brown paper. He quoted Oswald as saying it contained window shades. Curry said the first description of Oswald as a possible suspect came from a policeman who saw him in the lunchroom of the building where Oswald worked and from which the president was shot. Curry said one of his men drew a weapon on Oswald, but the manager said Oswald worked in the building, so the policeman let him go. Curry said a building porter also described Oswald as a possible suspect. Curry said it is still uncertain how Oswald reached the Oak Cliff section. The chief said he left on foot from the building. Someone said they saw a man pick him up in a car, but Oswald had a bus transfer slip in his pocket when arrested. The police chief said he thinks Sergeant J.D. Tippett, the slain policeman, stopped Oswald on the basis of a broadcast description of the killer. Curry said Oswald was on foot, and as the sergeant got out of his car, Oswald started shooting. The chief added, "We think he thought Tippett knew he was involved in Kennedy's assassination and just started shooting." Curry said a citizen alerted police on the dead sergeant's car radio. A search for the assailant soon led to the Texas Theater. When officers went up to Oswald, he sprang from his seat shouting, "Well, this is it." Six officers subdued him at the time, and Curry said police did not think then that he was a suspect in the Kennedy shooting. So much for the information from Dallas. From Paris, we learned today that President de Gaulle is going to fly to Washington to attend President Kennedy's funeral. The announcement of the French leader's intentions came from the palace in Paris. Mrs. Kennedy's news secretary, Pamela Turnure, gave newsmen a little information about the children today. They asked the secretary if the two Kennedy youngsters had been told of their father's death, and the secretary replied, "I really wouldn't know." The former First Lady and her two children were in the White House living quarters today. They did find that out, and the youngsters had been taken to the home of Mrs. Kennedy's mother, Mrs. Hugh Auchincloss, last evening. Chief Justice Warren says today that the Supreme Court is canceling the sitting scheduled for Monday. He said the cancellation is out of respect to the memory of the late president.
Excuse me, Barney, for interrupting, but here is late word from Dallas, Texas, which I think will be of great interest. Dallas police have arrested a second man and are questioning him in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. He is believed to be a friend of Leo Oswald, who is charged, of course, with the murder in the assassination. The second man has not been identified. Justice of the Peace David Johnson says he issued a search warrant for the second man's home, but the man allowed a search without protest. Oswald, meanwhile, asked for a lawyer. Reporters were permitted to watch today as Oswald was escorted to the interrogation room in the Dallas jail. A newsman agreed not to ask Oswald any questions. However, as he approached the television microphone, Oswald stopped and said, "I want to contact my apartment in New York. There's a man there who will defend me, a man who is my lawyer." That was all he said.
Well, that, okay, second man, that second man is an interesting factor because, as we just said, there were a couple of reports that Oswald had been given a ride from the scene of the shooting, had been driven to where he was picked up, or at least driven back to where he lived, and then he evidently walked to the theater where he was arrested. And perhaps this second man ties into that automobile story. There's a report out of Ottawa today on the Radio 15 news line. Prime Minister Lester Pearson had some comments about the death of John Kennedy. He said the world has lost a great friend.
That loss through assassination is one of the great tragedies of history. But for us, now, it is something more. It is a great, heartbreaking, personal tragedy. There are millions of people tonight who, throughout the world, will feel that they have lost a friend. President Kennedy was young. He was a man of courage in war and in peace. He devoted himself to public service. He worked unselfishly for the public good as he saw it. He has paid for this public service with his life. For the president, it was death on duty.
Canadian Prime Minister Lester Pearson was speaking from Ottawa. So today, on this Saturday, following one of the great tragic days in all history, the bronze coffin rests on a black-draped platform in the famed East Room of the White House. It is said this is the same platform used to support the casket of Abraham Lincoln following his assassination a century ago. Today, a much younger man is at rest in the coffin atop the black-draped support, the youngest man ever to hold the great office of President of the United States and to bear its tremendous responsibilities. After 46 brilliant years, John Fitzgerald Kennedy's career has been snuffed out at its height. A twisted mind in Dallas caused a finger to jerk on the trigger of a high-powered rifle and a bullet to smash into a brain that had guided the world's most powerful nation for more than 2 years. Another bullet ripped into the neck and body of the president. At a hospital, a few hours later, the nation and the free world suffered a great loss. President Kennedy's heart had stopped. His great brain was stilled. The nation and the world knew its loss. Women cried in the streets. Men, even the most rugged of men, reporters, lots of them, were seen weeping in public. Death and the twisted mind of the assassin had deprived them of a truly great man, deprived us all. A man described by enemies and friends alike as good, brilliant, a man who loved America. The assassin and the crazed motives that drove him had also deprived a young mother of her husband and John and Caroline of their dad. Jacqueline Kennedy accompanied her husband's body to Washington from Dallas early this morning, and she's beside him again today in the East Room of the White House. A young mother and widow appearing numb from the grave tragedy that has befallen her and her children, perhaps asking the same question among themselves, heard thousands of times across a grieving, saddened nation today. Why? How could it happen in America? Well, we don't have the answer to that one. That's the wrap-up at 1 o'clock on WJBK Radio 15. We'll have further reports on the activities in Washington, and if there are further reports out of Dallas on the Oswald case, we'll bring them to you. Our next scheduled report is at 1:30 on WJBK AM and FM in Detroit. This is Barney Morris along with Bob King.
Thank you.
This is station WJBK, AM and FM, Detroit, Michigan, 130.
This is Barney Morris now reporting on the Radio 15 Newsline. Police in Dallas, Texas have brought in for questioning a man named Rodriguez Molina, who worked in the same building as accused assassin Lee Oswald. It was from that building the shots were fired that killed President Kennedy. Molina was not booked. Police say he went to the station voluntarily. Molina and Oswald worked in the Texas School Book Warehouse building. It was from a sixth-floor window of the building that three shots were fired yesterday that ended the life of the president and wounded Governor John Conley. State Department authorities said today that they have no evidence indicating involvement of the Soviet Union or any other foreign power in the assassination of the president. Oswald, who was a former Marine and spent 3 years in the Soviet Union, has been formally charged with the shooting. When Oswald went to Russia, he announced his intention to renounce his American citizenship. He told the U.S. Embassy in Moscow he was a Marxist. After having a change of mind and returning to the United States last year, Oswald reportedly became an active sympathizer of Prime Minister Fidel Castro's Cuba.